Hello, my name is Eli Scott Joseph, and I am a student project manager at the Clark Forum for Contemporary Issues at Dickinson College. Today, I am joined by Sarah Nance, an interdisciplinary artist and assistant professor of integrated practice in the Harper College of Arts and Sciences at SUNY Binghamton in New York. Sarah Nance is visiting Dickinson College to deliver a Clark Forum program titled Mirages and Archive Landscapes, and display an exhibit titled For Evaporated Seas that is free and open to the public at the Goodyear Gallery. She will be joining me today for an interview. Welcome, Sarah Nance.
Thank you. So good to be here.
All right. I think we're just going to jump right into the first question. Throughout your portfolio, there's a strong through line of landscape, environment, and using data to scaffold your art. How do you find using data shapes your creative process? Do you first look at a data set and use that to come up with your idea? Or does the idea come first and the next step is to find the data? Or does it work differently for different projects?
So it definitely works differently for different projects. And I also am pretty expansive about what I think about as data. So sometimes I'm using scientific data sets that are collected by other people through these very rigorous methods. And then sometimes I'm using information that I have collected through my own time in the field, and that can be a series of color, like how I see color distributed in a landscape, for example. It could be photographs, it could be other kinds of field notes. And those are maybe less scientific forms of data, certainly, but they're still useful bits of information for me to work from. In a few projects, so for example, in one, I was working with data sets from seismic activity. And I knew that I was interested in using seismic activity, and in this case, I was translating it into a knitting pattern. And so that began with this sort of broad idea of knowing what I wanted to do, and then I needed to go out and find these data sets that would sort of corroborate my, you know, that would facilitate my ability to do that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Sort of following up on the creative process, how do you choose what medium to work in, as you work in a variety of different mediums? Is there a way you specifically, for some projects, you think it works better to work in some mediums versus others?
Certainly. I'm certainly an interdisciplinary artist, but my background is in fiber, both in an academic sense and then also just in techniques that I learned from my family. I was mentioning this in the lecture the other night, that I learned how to embroider, knit, sew, and even cane chairs from different members of my family. So fiber is really kind of like the guiding medium and technique that I use throughout my work. So even when I'm doing a piece, like a vocal piece, I'm still thinking about that through a fiber lens. So in some of these vocal pieces that I do, I am addressing the history of a landscape in a given place. And so when I go out and perform those vocal pieces back into the landscape, I'm thinking of that sound as a covering for that space. And the dimensions of that covering are determined by how far the sound of my voice can reach. So I'm still thinking in this fiber way, even though I'm working in something like sound. And my hope is that, you know, kind of framing this conceptually as a shroud, as a covering, as one layer in the landscape helps us think about the other layers that exist in that landscape.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. For another question, when you introduce yourself in sort of an academic setting, do you find it constricting to label yourself as either an artist or an academic, or scientist? Do you prefer one over the other?
I usually, in an academic setting, I'm usually introducing myself through the teaching that I do. I don't know that I have a great necessarily reason for mentioning that before mentioning being an artist. I think I gain so much from teaching, from learning from my students, and also through putting together curriculum that's dealing with the things that I'm interested in my studio, that it doesn't feel out of place to lead with that. But I definitely also think of myself as an artist. And I know that this is a question that a lot of people kind of come up against in how they frame themselves in academia. So I understand why you're bringing this up.
sort of going on that note, as a teacher, what are some of like the value you think that being a professor adds to your art and collaborating with students, and sort of getting ideas maybe?
Mm-hmm. So I'm very lucky in teaching in an interdisciplinary position, or a position that kind of allows me to teach across sculpture, drawing, and fiber, for example, in that I can come up with new curriculum as I see how students are interested in working. So for example, students seem to be very excited about a lot of different fiber processes right now, really excited about doing handwork processes like stitching or beading or knitting, and also really excited about performance. And so I've been able to develop some classes that speak to those ways of working. I think it's also been exciting to me to be able to bring some of the things that I'm thinking about in the studio into the classroom. So one of the classes that I have been able to put together at Binghamton is called Knitting in Catastrophe. Mm. And I think about catastrophe as like a subversion of the order of things, and knitted fabrics are very flexible, they're really stretchy, they unravel easily, they don't hold their shape. So they're always kind of unruly and difficult to kind of make them keep a certain form. And so I think about knitted textiles as also these useful materials maybe for carrying messages of subversion or of another way of being in the world. And so in this class, this Knitting and Catastrophe class, we work with that way of thinking about catastrophe, of making works that are maybe taking on a position of protest or representing a viewpoint that is not necessarily otherwise platformed in the world. And then we also do some stitch hacking, because I am also really interested in this like connection between knitting and data. And so, yeah, that's just another way that it's kind of come into the classroom for me.
Could you elaborate on what stitch hacking is?
Sure. I know. I just threw it out there like it was a common thing. But it's a way of deconstructing some of the existing elements of a knit structure. So if you have a knitted fabric that has a certain pattern in it, you can cut into that fabric and remove some threads and then reintroduce a new thread to knit a different pattern or color into it. So you're replacing some of the pattern that was there initially.
That's really interesting. I want to learn more about that.
Yeah, it's fun.
So in your research and your work, you draw upon landscapes from anywhere from Arizona to the moon and everywhere in between. How do you try and translate their beauty into art? And what do you think the value of kind of traveling to these places adds to your art?
These are really great questions. I think I'm going to come back to the beauty question in a second and start with this like value of doing field work. For me, I am looking to convey some of my personal experiences in a landscape. So being able to spend time in these places is really critical for me to get an understanding of a place that's not only based in information from other sources. It's really important to me, especially when I'm working with data sets, to bring in the element of personal experience, because I think it's really through understanding our individual relationships and communal relationships to landscape that we can start to evolve how those relationships look, to try and move them from a place that's maybe more extractive or focused on our own needs or desires or projections onto a space, and to look at the agency of the landscape itself, and maybe, its own trajectory apart from human needs or desires. And then as far as the beauty question goes, I think that there's something very valuable about beauty in art, in its ability to hold our attention and maybe hold our attention on something that might be otherwise uncomfortable to look at or think about. It's a little bit of a tricky line to walk because beauty can also sometimes aestheticize something that is a problem. It can kind of paper over being able to truly see, you know, a given issue in a place. But yeah, I would say I'm not necessarily trying to primarily capture the beauty of the landscape, but I'm allowing my aesthetic experiences in a place to inform the work that comes out of those spaces.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. As an interdisciplinary artist, how do you think the use of different materials affects the meaning of your work? Like, how do you think song versus fiber versus a performative piece kind of affects meaning?
Mm-hmm. I definitely think a lot about how my materials are conveying different things in my work. So maybe a good example are the Mylar quilts that I've made. I use Mylar from emergency blankets, which are used, as the name suggests, in emergency situations to sort of help people regulate temperature to get warmer or to stay cooler. They were also used in space exploration. They have military applications. And then they're also used as streamers or tinsel or party decorations or balloons. And I used Mylar from all of these sources because I'm looking for, you know, all these different colors that I can make or that I can use within my quilts. And because I'm using this material that has so many different applications in the world outside of how it's operating in my artwork, it's bringing those associations into the work and helping me reference some of the really innovative ways that we're interacting with the environments, but also some of the ways that are just sort of everyday or banal. And yeah, it just helps me talk about, I guess, a range of human relationship to place.
Yeah, that's awesome. I was wondering, in particular, how do you think the use of cross-stitching patterns for your Points of Rupture series was impactful, and sort of how did you come up with that project?
So those are actually knitting patterns, and I was interested, I was talking a little bit about this knitting and catastrophe class and how knit structures really want to unravel and they're not necessarily super stable. So that was a big connection I was making in that series, where I'm taking seismic data from moonquakes and icequakes that happen in glaciers and translating that data into a knitting pattern. And I can understand why you're thinking about cross-stitch, because what I'm using are these knitting symbols for the different stitches, and they end up looking, in some cases, kind of like cross-stitch. But I'm drawing this connection between how the seismic activity in a moonquake or an icequake is disrupting that landscape, is kind of an unstable component of that landscape, and then how, you know, this tenuous nature of knitting that kind of always wants to unravel. I mean, I'm making that connection there.
Yeah, that's awesome. That makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. When looking through your body of work, I saw that you attended the 2051 Munich Climate Conference. To my understanding, this was an interdisciplinary conference imagining what a climate conference might look like in 2051. Do I have that correct? And what was your experience like there?
Absolutely, you have it correct. Yes, so this took place in 2021, and we all presented from a version of the world that was 30 years in the future, thinking about whether we had a choice. Like, did the world 30 years in the future achieve some of the climate goals that we've set now, or did we fall short of those goals? And I chose to present from a world where we had fallen short of those goals because I was presenting these arias that are sonifications of tide level data. And these arias are mournful pieces that are really talking about some of the challenges that we're going through as people right now and trying to achieve more of a balance in relationship with landscape, and a lot of times falling short. But it was a really, really interesting conference. There were a lot of people presenting just kind of new strategy. Like, some people were reimagining capitalistic strategies that sort of prioritized the earth itself as an agent, which... Anyways, I could really go off on another tangent there that, you know, like, I don't know that we need to stay sort of rooted in capitalism in our imaginings of the future. But my point is just that people were approaching this topic from a lot of different fields and trying to think in new ways about how we might be living in 2051.
Yeah, I would have loved to be there. So when you come up with, when you're doing your art, do you find the process of coming up with the idea for art or the process of actively making it more gratifying, or are they both kind of gratifying in different ways?
Mm-hmm. So something that I keep saying that I should probably stop saying, because I'm sure it's really influencing how I go about it and how I think about it, is I always talk about how much I really hate writing, even though it's so good for my practice and so critical for me in being able to develop ideas. But it's just, for me, it's a very painful process because it's so continuously analytical and it's really forcing me to get really specific about how I'm thinking about my work, which just takes a lot of effort and a lot of very present thought. And those things are super important, and that's why I continue to do it. But it's really difficult to want to sit down and do that. Yes. Whereas when I get into this place where I'm beading, I've made a few beaded nets that each took a year, for example, to make. And I can sit down and I can listen to a podcast, or I can watch very bad TV and just be beading. And it's so enjoyable. And I really love the rhythm and the repetition of making in that way. So both are very important. I can't have just the making without also the conceptualizing and be satisfied with the work in the end. I think sometimes being in an academic sphere encourages me, or I feel pressured maybe to spend more time on conceptualizing the work rather than following maybe more of an intuitive approach to form and material. And so I'm in the space right now of kind of trying to balance that back out, but both are important. But I, you know, it's the making of the work that I really love.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. Do you have any advice you received on your artistic journey that you think really helped you, or any advice that you would give any up-and-coming artists?
Oh, that one I'm going to have to sit. You can edit out my silence here.
Oh, yeah, no.
Because I might have to think for a second about this advice. I just have gotten so much from so many people. I think that's what is hard to distill, because some of it is advice that, some of the things that are coming to mind are things that were very well intentioned that I've actually ended up pushing against. So for example, early on in making work, I was told again and again and again and again that someday I would have to work faster. Someday I would have to choose a way of working that meant that I could make more work, that I could produce more work. And that advice was true in many ways. Like, as an academic, I do need to produce work. I need to sort of, I need to have a production record. That's an expectation of the university, and I think it's a reasonable expectation that I'm continuing to make work and I, you know, have something to show for the research that I'm doing. And at the same time, I really am thinking a lot about geologic time and how I can, through the processes that I take on, try to embody a sense of geologic time or get myself as close to an experience of that as I can, which means that the work that I'm doing needs to take a long time to start to get there. So I've come up with, I guess, a compromise where I'm working on some projects that I can turn out quickly and then others that are, you know, I'm in the middle of probably a 10-year project right now. So I think maybe my advice to artists, to younger artists working now, is to absorb the things that people are giving you, that are people are telling you, absorb them, process them, think about how they apply to your practice, try to get a sense of what feels right to follow, and don't be afraid, I guess, to change that as you need to fit your own unique practice.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Do you kind of see there's some tension between being an artist and being sort of under a university with your practice?
Certainly. I mean, I think like one of the essential components, I guess, of being an artist is, in my mind, trying to look at new ways of being in the world, new ways of imagining relationships, power structures, and the university exists, we all exist in a world that is operating under our current, you know, organization and power structures. And so to be an artist that's kind of trying to reimagine those or redefine those while working within them is a big challenge. But it's one that I'm interested and excited to take on.
Yeah. Last kind of question is there anything going on in your studio that you'd be willing to give us a sneak peek at?
I would love to give you a sneak peek into my studio. But interestingly enough, I just put up a show last week, in addition to the show that's at the Goodyear Gallery. That was a new wall drawing that took up the entire gallery space. And so it's not a project that was in my studio because it's on the wall in the gallery, but that's the most recent work that I've made. It's from a mitten knitting pattern, and I've made a few of these drawings. One is also in the Goodyear Gallery, and the whole series is called "And When You Change the Landscape, Is It with Bare Hands or with Gloves?" And it's an excerpt from Pablo Neruda's Book of Questions that makes me think about the different ways that we interact with landscape and where we put up protective barriers, like a glove, for example, and where we might be more open to change in ourselves or restricting ourselves through a mitten, for example, in how we interact with landscape. And so these mitten knitting patterns take motifs from different landscapes that I've experienced and incorporate them with these different mitten knitting structures to create these patterned drawings. But to be very honest, I've made a lot of work this year. And so I have so much admiration for the artists I know who are like, I have to go to the studio every day. I just have to make, I have this compulsion. It's a calling. I have that at times, certainly. But right now I want to paint my house and I want to do little repairs and I might want to knit a hat. I am in a place where I want to do a lot of reading. I want to do a lot of absorbing before I'm ready to make more work again.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. This concludes our interview. On behalf of the Clark Forum, thank you again for having this conversation with me.
Thank you so much.